Devoncast
from Radio X.
Welcome to Devoncast, the show that lifts the lid on the political machinations. A particularly important task this week, given the aftermath of the local elections.
It's all changed at County Hall after the Devon County Council poll on May the 1st, with the Conservatives taking a walloping, the Lib Dems surging, but not quite as high as they had perhaps hoped, and Reform becoming the largest opposition party.
We'll have all the ins and outs from the election in this episode, but we'll also be delving into a controversial offshore wind farm planning application in North Devon that courted nearly 2,000 objections. And we'll be getting the full lowdown on Exeter Pride.
But first, we've witnessed a significant changing of the guard at County Hall in Exeter, where the Conservatives, who'd led the County Council since 2009 with a majority, plunged to just 7 councillors, only one more than the Green Party, which secured an extra 4 members after the election. That means that the Liberal Democrats are the biggest single party with 27 seats, an impressive rise from their 9 members pre-election, but not enough to boast an overall majority. And let's not forget Nigel Farage's Reform UK party, which stormed to 18 seats from a standing start, making them essentially the main opposition party. Their surge contributed to the wiping out of Labour's 6 councillors it had before the vote. Brad, you were at County Hall on vote counting day. Tell us a bit more about the atmosphere.
Yes, it was certainly a dramatic day at County Hall, Ali, with jubilation among Liberal, Democrat and Reform members particularly, but some probably expected wound licking from the Conservatives. The Greens were in buoyant spirits too, having jumped to their 6 members from 2 prior to the poll. And their collaboration with the 2 independent members potentially gives them an 8 strong voting block there. Although the 2 independent members have sort of said that they would go their own way if they felt they needed to. In the immediate aftermath of the last results coming in and the Lib Dems being confirmed as the biggest party, I spoke to Councillor Caroline Lever, who held her Barnstaple South seat, about what the result meant for the party.
Well, we've only just had the result, so it's early days and it's too early for us to speculate as to what will happen going forward. But what I can say is that we've nearly tripled our numbers. So what I think is a really clear message from the people of Devon is that they've put their trust in us, as indeed they did at the general election in 2024. So, you know, we are really very, very proud to have been elected. It's a privilege to have been elected, and we will always do our very best to serve the people of Devon.
But without the help of others, that's potentially more challenging, isn't it? If all the other parties disagree with something you were doing, as it stands, unless you've got an ally or a coalition partner, that you could hit stumbling blocks.
It is always possible to hit stumbling blocks, absolutely, as you describe. But as I say, we've only just got the last result in. We're not in a position to be speculating about these things. And things will come out in the wash. Things will become clearer as time goes by.
That was Councillor Caroline Lever there, who at the time was still technically the leader of the Lib Dems in County Hall, but has stood down since then, and the role has gone to Councillor Julian Brazil.
Oh, so there's a bit of a change at the top. Is there? Does that mean Councillor Brazil will also continue to lead Southam's District Council too?
So the Lib Dems had a vote, Ali, to decide who was going to be leader of their group at County Hall. And Councillor Lever had apparently said prior to the election to her party, you know, she hadn't said it publicly, but to her party, she'd said she would step down as leader post-election. So the vote went Councillor Brazil's way, with the leader of East Devon District Council, Paul Arnott, now becoming deputy leader of the Devon County Group after he won the Seaton and Colleton seat. Having spoken to both Councillor Brazil and Arnott, it seems Brazil will probably relinquish leadership of the District Council. It's not 100% confirmed, but that's the sort of impression I'm getting, although he will remain a councillor on that district authority. But Councillor Arnott appears to want to stay leader of his district. That will, of course, need to be confirmed with a full vote at the full council next week. But given his political alliance on East Devon has a majority, he's likely to be confirmed as leader of that district again.
So what about the other parties? Do they have new leaders?
Well, we've literally just heard today as we're recording, which is on the 8th of May, that Andrew Leadbetter is the leader of the Conservative group. A vote for the new leader of that party was taken this week, and that happened because the former leader, Councillor James McInnes, didn't run for re-election. He didn't go to try and defend his seat. Interestingly, due to the retirement of various councillors, Councillor Leadbetter is now technically the father of the House, being the last of the 1997 intake to still be serving. He has, during his time, always represented Topsham, which through the years has also included Counterswear or St Loys after various boundary changes. As for Reform UK, there's no confirmed leader for that group yet. We've asked the question, but no answer has emerged. The other key person, of course, is Councillor Jackie Hodgson, who held her Totnes and Dartington seats for the Green Party. She's been confirmed again as the leader of the Green Independent Group, which includes independent members Councillor Paul Hayward, who won Axminster, and Councillor Jess Bailey, who held on to her Otter Valley seat. I spoke to Councillor Hodgson on Results Day and asked her what she made of her party's increased presence on the council.
Well, multiplying by three is excellent news. It gives us a real opportunity to be much more effective as a group. But I think we're going to be invited into negotiations with possibly the Lib Dems to see whether or not we could actually be part of the group that actually forms the governing party.
So do you think the Greens actually, although six members is small in the context of 60 total members, actually the amount of power you could wield could be important given that no party's got an overall majority?
Absolutely, and I think it's really important that the parties that can work together do. I mean, we've already shown this at South Hams, that I'm on the executive there at South Hams with a Lib Dem majority. I think that's working really well. We find ways to cooperate and work well. Finding common vision is a really, really important thing, and I'm already talking to the Lib Dems about what we would be expecting to actually try and deliver, not least of which is that we have to listen to what's happened with reform. Why are people voting reform? What is all this protest? What is all this anger all about? And, with a certain fear and trepidation about what the impact of having so many reform people actually on the council, which is potentially chaotic because all we're hearing is that they think they're going to stop the boats. Well, the wake-up call there is, of course, that the county council doesn't stop or start the boats. We don't have any of that kind of work to do, but we do have to deliver local proper services, and that takes just sitting down and doing common sense, common decency work.
You are going to have to work with reform to a degree, potentially. They're going to potentially be on committees, possibly. So what's your sort of approach to their diametrically opposed, potentially, viewpoints that the Greens have?
Well, I think it's not necessarily obviously diametrically opposed, because in fact what you hear from them is what they don't want. What you do hear from the Greens is what we do want. So, there's a kind of a potential kind of complementary arrangement there. And I think this is the key to it. I think this is where people vote Green is a positive vote. It's not a protest vote. And because they like what we do, like they like what we stand for, but often they're just fearful that we don't have enough strength of votes to get involved.
And do you think that's a key difference then, is that you feel like the Green vote is a more positive one rather than I just don't want to vote for them, so I'll vote Green?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think it's people tend to vote tactically because they think, well, we can't get what we really want, but we'll do a compromise, which is, human nature, and that's fine, and I think it's a strong way to be rather than end up with things that you really don't want.
Finally then, if you do have a seat at the top table, is there a key dominant issue that you want to have particular focus on?
I think they're all attractive from my point of view, to be honest. I'm really interested in community stuff because I chair a youth group, TRAY, which is, serving nearly 1,000 young people in the South Hams area, and I'd like to use that as a model. I'm really interested in what goes on with libraries and community services generally, which I think enhance quality of life and make people happier. I think we also need to look very clearly at what's possible for bringing services back in-house. And on that basis, I think that could actually be quite an interesting friction right through, because we need to take the anger and upset out of people and make people start to feel that there's a way forward that we can all pull together and feel positive. And I feel really passionately about that for people, because I think it's wrong that if politics is wrong if it's upsetting people and not listening to people.
That was the Green and Independent Group Leader, Councillor Jackie Hodgson.
And what about the Conservatives, Brad? Did anyone from the party speak to you after the election?
Yes, they did. I grabbed a few words with Councillor Andrew Leadbetter, who at that time wasn't definitely the leader, that hadn't been confirmed yet, but he did retain his Wearside and Topsham seats in spite of all the other Exeter County Council seats changing hands. Councillor Leadbetter expressed his disappointment, acknowledging the major political shake-up that had just happened.
Well, obviously, I'm disappointed that we've gone down to seven, and I pay tribute to all those really good councillors who lost their seats, but I think it's just shown the seismic change in the political landscape of the country. Came very close in lots of seats, but didn't quite make it over the line. Obviously, Reform have done very well. The country
Has Reform taken seats more from you than other parties, do you think, or is that difficult to tell?
I would think Reform have cost us seats, yes, without a doubt, but obviously the Liberal Democrats have done very, very well as well. And good luck to them all, yeah. So, yeah, we're disappointed that we're down to a magnificent seven, But like always, we'll rise from the ashes, and we look forward to working with everybody.
And in terms of the Exeter division, you're the sole Conservative now. Obviously, it was dominated by Labour before, yeah. Really, but now Green, Reform, and yourself representing Exeter on the County Council. Is that going to be an interesting mix of like representation of the city on the County Authority?
Well, I've always been quite used to being almost by myself on the City Council group. Labour lost all their seats in Exeter, so look at that. But yeah, it's going to be interesting times.
That was Councillor Andrew Leadbetter there, the Conservative member for Wearside and Topsham, and now leader of the Conservative group on the County Council.
Talking of Exeter, the city seats on the County Council were dominated by Labour prior to the election, but that party has been entirely wiped off the membership at County Hall now. Reform UK and the Green Party emerged as dominant forces, with the Lib Dems bagging another of the Exeter seats. Our colleague Guy Henderson brings us this from the count.
It was total wipeout for Labour and all change for Exeter as voters ushered in a major shake-up in the way the city is represented at County Hall. Prior to the election, Labour held 6 of the city's 9 seats and the Conservatives the other 3, but voters decided to upset the status quo. Reform and the Greens swept both of them aside, taking all 6 of Labour's seats between them. By the time the last result had been announced, Reform held 4 of the 9 seats and the Greens 3. The Liberal Democrats had gained 1 and the Conservatives had held on to 1. Here's the Green Party's Thomas Richardson, moments after his win in St Sidwell's and St James meant that he'd become the first Green to represent the city at County Hall.
This is my first time standing and it's our first ever Green County Councillor from Exeter on Devon County Council. What's clear from tonight is that people are very upset with the traditional parties. We've seen the Conservative vote absolutely collapse. And we've seen a very strong Labour majority from 2021 also completely subside. It's clear that people are looking for alternatives in politics nowadays, and the Greens are the party that are providing that alternative. So a Green voice in Devon County Council is well needed. There's so many things that we're trying to change in Devon. A big thing for us is public transport. We'd like to see a franchise model of the buses. So working towards things like that, you know, addressing the special educational needs issues that the County Council have had. And you know, we are looking forward to working with other progressive parties to make real change in Devon. We're looking at buses. You know, buses are a huge issue, not just for people in rural communities, but people in Exeter as well. You know, until recently, we had parts of Exeter with an hourly bus service, which we think is completely unacceptable for a city centre suburb. So we'd really like to see a franchise model for buses. So it will be, you know, rather than the bus companies deciding how to connect communities, it will be us telling the bus companies how to connect communities to make sure that no one's left behind.
Angela Nash was one of the successful Reform candidates, taking the Labour seat of Wanford and St Loys. I asked her what she thought was behind the party's success.
I think it's the people's desire for change. I think people are just fed up with being lied to constantly and they want a change. They want something different. They want some common sense brought back. And we can do that in Reform, and it's fantastic for Reform. We want to give the people a voice, we want to get them heard, so the fact we can do that nationally is even better.
By the end of the day, there could be quite a substantial group of Reform councillors on Devon County Council. What do you think you can bring to the County Council?
Passion for getting things right for our local people, for giving them a voice and making sure they're heard and making sure that everything is transparent.
And I also caught up with Exeter City Council leader and long-serving Labour councillor Philby Alec, reflecting on the events of the day and looking ahead to what they might mean.
Well, I'm very disappointed, obviously. I'm not going to pretend. I've fought many elections over the last 50 years and there's been some good ones and some bad ones. This is down the list of some bad ones. We've worked a hard campaign here in Exeter. The good thing is we had a good set of candidates who would have served the constituents very well indeed. It's a shame that they will not be able to demonstrate that on the County Council. However, looking across Exeter, in the 9 divisions here, more people voted Labour than any other political party. So I've got something to take away. It just demonstrates that there is a strong support for Labour in Exeter. We will continue to represent those people on the City Council and we will still continue to deal with their issues. So it's over to Reform or Lib Dems. You now have the responsibility of dealing with our children's education, our people's adult and social care services. I'd like you to deal with those potholes on the way home. I'd like you to deal with our transport infrastructure and our bad bus services. So over to you, Reform. You will have a record to defend very soon.
Labour's Phil Bialik, with a challenge to the parties with the biggest numbers at County Hall now.
That was Guy Henderson there, speaking to new councillors who now represent Exeter on the County Council. And lastly, garnering the reaction of the City Council's Labour leader, Phil Bialik.
And Ali, you were at the North Devon count where there was sweeping change too. You've pulled together some of the reaction from those involved and perhaps more importantly from those who will now no longer be involved. So let's hear that now.
It was all change in North Devon at the Devon County Council elections as a shift turned from the Conservatives to the Liberal Democrats. But there was also wins for the Greens and Reform UK. Andrea Davis, a councillor for Coombe Martin for 20 years, was the only Conservative to win a seat. Previously, the party had held 5 of the 8 seats in the district. The Liberal Democrats added Braunton and Chumley and Landkey to their tally, having retained Barnstable South and North. And Frank Biederman, who switched from Independent to Liberal Democrats shortly before the election, was convincingly re-elected in Fremington Rural. That left Ilfracombe and South Moulton, the former won by Greens, and the latter by Reform UK. Reform also came second in some of the wards. Firstly, I spoke to Councillor Frank Biederman, who said he was relieved to win for the Liberal Democrats in Fremington Rural.
I've knocked on 1,000 doors over the last few weeks, and the people were really quite positive, but at the same time, you're aware of this reform surge, so you can never be confident, can you? But, I mean, absolutely just choked that the people of Fremington Rural have put their faith back in me to serve them and listen to them and act in their best interests.
That reform surge was felt in South Moulton, where the candidate Richard Hopley won a close vote.
I'm thrilled, absolutely thrilled that Reform have got this seat, and I thank everybody that voted for me in the South Moulton division, and thank you to all the people who leafleted and gave me good wishes. There were many, many people that did that. Branch did a fantastic job, just 6 weeks, and we've managed to achieve this and lots of seconds in North. Brilliant achievement, and I'll do my utmost to make sure that I represent the constituents well.
I mean, it was a close vote. That was the last vote to be declared.
It was. I think they were recounted twice. But yes, it was very close. I couldn't go and watch. Some of my colleagues went to watch for me because I couldn't watch. But yes, it was very, very close. And Paul Henderson, there was only 30-odd votes in it in the end. But so 30 very, very important votes.
The Greens won 6 seats in Devon. Sarah Wilson was one of those in Ilfracombe.
It's really clear that a lot of people don't feel heard and they don't feel listened to, and they don't have to be a Green supporter, but having those conversations really did actually encourage me. That was my main takeaway from the campaigning.
And to have another seat for the Greens, I mean, you know, we do look at it a lot of the time like it's a Conservative Lib Dem sort of picture around here, but to get a seat for the Greens, how significant is that?
Yeah, hugely significant. We've actually had a really good groundswell of Green support in Ilfracombe going back quite a few years, and we just want this legacy to continue, and we want to build on it, and it is there in other communities, but as a smaller party we don't always have the resources to actually tap into it, but we've shown in Ilfracombe that if we put resources and really fight a campaign, we can actually win, and we can do that in other communities, and it brings a feeling of real hope to people.
It's fair to say that it was not a good night for the Conservatives. Here's Paul Crabb, who had previously represented Ilfracombe as a Conservative councillor. He left before the result as he could see things were not looking good.
I think today's results, right across North Devon, I mean, they're an appalling result for the Conservative Party. In my view, this is a wake-up call for the party, and it's time to get serious about some of the things. We need policies. I mean, in fairness, I'm a candidate, and I don't know what the Conservatives stand for at the minute. There's nothing coming out of head office, apart from the fact we may stitch up all the pensioners, and we are going to lose hundreds of council seats. What an appalling message to be sending out 3 days in front of a council election. I despair sometimes at head office, and I think they've been let down. 7 good candidates are in this room today.
Conservative Prue Maskell also lost her seat in Braunton. I asked her where she thought it all went wrong.
I think it was Reform. I think I had people saying to me that they thought I was doing a good job, but they couldn't vote for me because they had to send a message to government. So it wasn't even about punishing the Conservatives anymore. It was about, you know, telling Labour that they, you know, they've had enough. So, yeah, quite a lot of my residents wanted to send a message nationally. And I'm still really proud of what the Conservatives have achieved in Devon. I'm really proud to have served as one of their colleagues. And I don't agree with what the Liberal Democrats are saying. I think we've got a really strong council at the moment, and I really hope they look after it, and I hope they don't go on a spending spree like they have done in the past. We have looked after this council, and we haven't cut services, and we've reshaped things, and I'm really proud to have been part of that.
So, with 5 of the 8 seats going to the Liberal Democrats in North Devon, and 27 of the 60 seats at Devon County Council going to the party, making them the largest party but without a full majority, I asked Councillor Caroline Lever, who was re-elected for Barnstable South with an increased majority, what we can expect from the Liberal Democrats.
We have a team of experts ready to go to really look at how it is that in Devon the average cost of mending a pothole is £189, while in Lib Dem run Somerset next door, the average cost of mending a pothole is £60. Another absolutely huge priority for the council is going to be special educational needs and disabilities. This is for the children with those additional needs. The overspend that the incoming council is going to have to deal with is in the region of £160 million. At the moment, that is kept off the books. At the end of this coming financial year, that will not be the case unless the government allows that to carry on in that arrangement. It is sucking the money out of every single other part of the council.
That was you, Ali, speaking to some of the new councillors in the North Devon district of the county elections, but also some of the big hitting Conservative names who lost their seats.
Councillor Lever touched upon the overspend in special educational needs. Is that going to be a big issue at County Hall in the coming years, Brad?
Absolutely it is, Ali, yeah. Arguably it's one of the biggest issues the Lib Dems hit the Conservatives over the head with in the run-up to and during the election campaign. The council does have a huge send-over spend, but it is far from alone in this. Nationally, there's some £6 billion of such overspend, and Devon has, according to my understanding, an overspend at present of just over £131 million. Councillor Lever, in your piece there, mentioned the £160 million figure. I think that's the estimate for what it could be by the end of this financial year, which will end in April. But regardless, it's a big number. All councils have been able to park this, though, at the side of their balance sheet, meaning it's being recorded, but it gets kept out of its annual accounts. But that rule that allows that expires in March, and the only person who can truly decide what happens afterwards is the Prime Minister, Sir Keir Starmer.
So what other issues will the new administration have to deal with when it's confirmed later this month?
There will no doubt be many things, Ali, that crop up, but a few of the key ones I would suggest would be potholes, because let's face it, once you get Devonian started on potholes, you can't stop them talking. There's a roughly £200 million backlog, so we'll see how that gets tackled by the new administration. Children's services, which was rated inadequate in January 2020, was visited by Ofsted in October last year, but the result of their inspection still hasn't been published. If that's negative, it will mean a significant item on the to-do list. And then you'd have to say the notion of financial waste and inefficiency, that the Conservatives were blamed for cutting some services. But with inflation, rising cost of employment and increased demand, it'll be interesting to see what difficult choices the Lib Dems have to make.
Yes, it certainly will. And we'll be keeping you all up to date with the decisions that the new administration makes at County Hall.
You're listening to Devoncast from Radio X and the Local Democracy Reporting Service. It's available from your regular podcast provider and on Devoncast Radio across the county. We've got all the details of Exeter Pride coming up, but now we turn to a controversial plan to land cables for an offshore wind farm at the world-renowned surfing beach at Saunton Sands in North Devon, which was approved this week. Ali, you attended the marathon meeting, so tell us more.
Yes, I did, Brad. Well, the Whitecross Offshore Wind Farm Limited has got the go-ahead from North Devon Council for the 8-kilometre cable route and a new substation at East Yelland in an area which is rich in protected landscapes. Environmental concerns have been at the forefront of this application, which was first submitted 2 years ago. and there's been huge public interest. The wind farm is a test site to demonstrate the viability of floating offshore wind in the Celtic Sea, and it's expected to be the catalyst for more investment and jobs in this sector. Whitecross plans to put up 8 floating turbines 30 miles off the North Devon coast, with the electricity cable going under Saunton Sands Golf Course, along the edge of Braunton Burrows and under the Tor estuary.
But isn't the landscape there, as you mentioned, Ellie, like under certain protections or designations?
Yes, it absolutely is. Wait for it. I've got a whole list here. So the area's a marine conservation zone, a world surfing reserve, a site of special scientific interest, a special area of conservation, a heritage coast, UNESCO biosphere and national landscape. Now, there were nearly 2,000 objections to the plans and a petition of almost 4,000 names. So we had TV crews, Southwest business leaders and more than 130 members of the public, as many as could fit into the public gallery at Barnstable Rugby Club, who came along to speak and watch the 5.5 hour long meeting of North Devon's planning committee. Councillors admitted they were torn over the decision, balancing the environmental impact against the need for more renewable energy to reach the country's net zero target by 2050. On top of this, there were concerns over highway safety and air pollution.
And how long is this project going to take to complete, Alex? I think you said earlier to me you've been covering this story for about 2 years already, so...
I'm a bit of an expert on this one. The project's construction will take more than 2 years, with Saunton's only beach car park being the main work hub, and the village of Braunton can expect to see up to 92 HGV movements a day through its narrow streets during the peak of the activity. Now, 39 conditions have been put in place by the planning authority to try and mitigate the impact on the community, environment and wildlife. And there'll be a community liaison officer put in place, an enhanced bus service to get people to the beach paid for by the developer. Councillor Mark Hayworth Booth told us why he supported the plan.
Carbon emissions have been going up ever since a climate emergency was declared in 2019 and ever since the Climate Act was enacted in 2008. So we've made these great gestures and not enough has happened. And the other thing about getting on with it is that we're not alone in this field of floating wind farms on platforms. We have international rivals, and if the UK wants to show leadership and get the rewards for that, both in terms of encouraging other countries to do something, but also in terms of technology and jobs, we have to be leaders. I'm a pretty active member of the Devon Wildlife Trust. I've been to many North Devon coastwise events over the years. I'm a great supporter of the biosphere. I'm part of the British Naturalist Association local branch, Barnstable and Exmoor. I count birds overwintering for the British Trust for Ornithology. I'm very involved in this. I test water for West Country Rivers Trust. I'm very involved. So I am conflicted because I'm very aware of the ecological side of things, but the other side of it is that Natural England have supported this proposal, and if it's good enough for them, it's good enough for me.
That was Councillor Hayworth Booth there. Some committee members flagged up a lack of information in the application. Whitecross had used something called the Rochdale envelope approach, which means that some details of the project did not have to be confirmed until permission was granted, therefore giving them a level of flexibility. Councillor Simon Maddock said he didn't think that it was right that the Rochdale envelope approach had been used across the whole site, and was one of two councillors who voted against the scheme.
My main concerns really were that they're using the Rochdale envelope and none of the real information is given until planning permission has been given. Nothing is in place. So, you know, the risk is that they'll change what they're doing, and then because the Braunton Burrows is such an important SSSI site, it does stand a good chance of being damaged. You know, it will recover, but certain areas might not recover. But also, you know, the local businesses and the tourist trade will be affected, I think. You know, it could be 2 years. You know, that's a long time for local businesses that are having to live off of that seasonally. But my main concern was the boroughs and the lack of information.
Yeah, I mean, you said there it's, you know, a site that's talked about throughout the world.
Yeah, well, it's a world biosphere, so it is. It should not be touched. You know, if I was trying to build a house down there, I wouldn't be able to do it. You know, I know this, they say this is important, but it's not that important because they could, I believe, they could have come in different places that were less sensitive.
It's disappointing, but I'm taking some sort of encouragement from the fact that there was a very lively debate in the committee, and also it wasn't a unanimous decision. You know, you have to take the positives, don't you? The upshot is it's been approved, but that, you know, at this stage, I think there are sufficient grounds potentially to challenge it through the legal process because we feel there are some anomalies, but we're going to go and take advice on that. We need to look into it a bit further before we can make a decision to just give up. I don't think that this decision today means that it's the end of the road. As I said, as a group, Save Our Sands is pro-renewables and we are completely on board with the idea of decarbonisation. That's not what this is about. This is about why are we damaging a very rare and important ecological site in the race to get ahead.
That was Helen Cooper of Save Our Sands. Finally, we hear from Paul Coles, CEO of the South West Business Council and local resident. I asked him if the 300 construction jobs Whitecross was predicting for the South West from this development would be for the people of North Devon.
I think there's every opportunity for those jobs to be for local people. And to be honest, it's not just the Whitecross development opportunity here, because the whole of the Celtic Sea is potentially 4 gigawatts initial floating offshore wind, going to 20 gigawatts. So over multiple decades, there's a huge supply chain opportunity. I mentioned Appledore and the Clean Maritime Innovation Centre. They're looking at clean propulsion systems for vessels. So it's all this type of support and supply chain opportunity could be very significant for us, and I think is exciting for the region. But today, I think it's the start of a much deeper engagement that's needed with communities around the environment and businesses around potential impact and benefit. You've heard today that there's a whole host of other reports that will be looked into to ensure that before they commence anything, that the council officers are very happy with how they're going to approach the project. So I think it was important that people raise their concerns today, genuinely important, and it's an opportunity for further engagement downstream.
So do you think Whitecross will do that?
I'm utterly convinced they will do. I'm utterly convinced. It's in the spirit of any engagement that I've had with them that they want to be really open about what they're doing, right? And we've heard some, you know, plenty of opportunities for that to happen in the future. So I'm confident of it.
That was Paul Coles of the South West Business Council. Following the decision, Whitecross Project Director Al Rayner said the company was grateful to everyone who'd engaged with the project throughout the process, and plans have been adapted to minimise environmental and social impacts in response to feedback. He said, "The UK is already a leader in floating offshore wind technology, and this decision gives us a valuable opportunity to deliver the energy transition right here in North Devon, sparking the development of a specialised local supply chain and creating jobs, whilst providing 135,000 homes with renewable energy."
Wow, that is a major scheme. It's really interesting to hear about the challenges that a clean energy project faces, especially when they're sited amid protected landscapes. And I'm sure we'll hear more about this project as it's being built from you, Ali. But yeah, it's a cracking story. And what do you think is going to happen after this? And obviously it's been approved, but do you think that's the end of it now? It's just going to get built and no more comeuppance?
I don't think it will be quietly built. I think there'll be a lot of people with their eyes on that project, and they're certainly the community's going to make sure that, you know, it's done the right way. As I say, there's a community liaison officer, which is quite unusual, really, with any kind of planning application. So I think it is going to be quite stressful for a while for the community, because, you know, there's going to be noise inevitably. There's going to be, you know, digging up of places that the community don't really want to see. But in time, you know, that should all be put back together, and, you know, things should get back to normal. But, you know, there is question marks over it still. So, yeah, we'll be keeping tabs on that and bringing the latest information to the public anyway.
Yeah, definitely. It'd be interesting to see how that community liaison officer fares as well. That's going to be a pretty tricky job, I reckon.
Yeah, it definitely is. Finally, time for something a bit more lighthearted. Exeter Pride returns to the city, which is one of the UK's largest free Pride events, celebrating the LGBTQ+ community in Exeter and the wider South West. Radio X's Adam Kavanagh caught up with the chair of Exeter Pride, Russell Back, and communications coordinator, Izzy Cox.
Firstly, what can people expect at Pride this year? Hello, and thanks for having us on. So we've got so much going on this year. We're so excited to share with you about some of our plans. We've been busy beavering away and putting loads of things together. So we've got Northern Hay Gardens, which is our usual home, but we've got so much more going on in the park this year. So we've got two stages up there. We've got a massive marketplace, loads of different fabulous local artists. And we've even expanded this year to go into Rougemont Gardens as well. So we've got so many things going on across the city.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're even in our other venues as well. So the Phoenix, the Library, the Ram, they're all hosting workshops and activities throughout the day. Lots to do there as well. But in the gardens, we've got a kind of a full day, really, of activities going on. So our two stages that Russell was just talking about, they're going from 1 till 6, full of performances, all kinds of things. And we've got the dog show in Rougemont.
Yes!
Going on. I'm very excited for that. Bring your pooches along to be judged. I think there's something like 15 different categories or something, which is going to be a bit chaos. It's our first ever dog show, but it'll be fine.
It's going to be great.
But yeah, so much going on. Yeah.
So how has the event grown or changed since it first began?
So Exeter Pride celebrated its 15 years of Pride last year. So we've been going for quite a while now, and our founder, Alan Quick, is still with us, still banging the drum, still fighting for the rights of our community. Absolutely love him. Shout out to our daddy, Alan, there. But it started actually originally back in February to coincide with LGBT History Month, and they started with a march then. And over the years, Exeter Pride has had its ups and downs, like lots of different charities all around the country. But yeah, it's really rejuvenated, and after the unfortunate cancellation in 2023, the community just really came out in droves. We had so many people coming forward to volunteer, to help out, loads of businesses to sponsor and support, and it's really, really happy to say that we are back and we're here for good now, and we're in a really, really good position.
So what are some of the messages that you hope people will take away from the event this year?
So some of the messages that we hope people will take away will be kind of part of our core values, really, and that's things like celebrating our community, solidarity. So with the Supreme Court ruling that's happened recently, solidarity is really important, and protesting as well. So, you know, bringing that into Exeter Pride is one of our core kind of values as an organisation, and kind of awareness and education, really, educating the community, the wider community, our allies, and kind of bringing awareness to the queer joy that we celebrate in our Pride events and in Pride Month every year.
Oh, we love the queer joy. It just fills you up on the day, doesn't it? It's just beautiful.
It does. Yeah, we love it.
Organising something this big must take quite a lot of work. So how do you do it?
It helps if you don't sleep.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah,
lots of help. It is, like I was saying, with the growth of Exeter Pride. So Exeter Pride went through its struggles, and the committee got down to just a couple of people. And it's just not possible to run an event like Exeter Pride with a group that small. We are so fortunate that so many incredible people like Izzy herself came forward and have really just gone to town with it and made it their own. And it's people like that, getting in post, getting involved, giving little bits of time, that have really managed to put it on. There's no just one person, it's proper like a family effort, and everyone is given everything and pulled together, and we are so excited to show you what you've managed to get up to this year.
Yeah.
Brilliant, thank you. So how can people still help to get involved in the event?
So this year you can get involved by joining the march, whether that's in the march or just attending and supporting everyone who is marching. You can come along to the dog show that's happening in Rougemont. You can come along to all of the venues. So there's the Phoenix, the Library, the Ram. They're hosting so many different workshops and talks that you can go to, which are all run by the community. And it's really great to just support those kinds of things. And then Northern Hay is just full of so many things going on. So just get on down there, really, and just have a bit of fun.
Can't wait for Northern Hay Gardens. We've got we were joking the other day because we've got a bit of a sort of chill out accessibility space, and it's sort of like a sensory deprivation space, and we think the whole committee are going to end up in there by the end of the day.
Yeah.
So go in there, just zone out, chill, put the headphones on, eye masks, just have a nice relax.
Yeah.
So there is so much stuff going on up in the park. Just have a wander around, have an explore, talk to people, soak up with all the queer joy, and come along. We can't wait.
So let's move over to voluntary work that is involved in Exeter Pride. What made you want to volunteer?
That's a good question. What made me want to volunteer was being part of the LGBTQ plus community, and being able to give back to that community, get involved, and kind of even make friends in the community. It's just such a great opportunity to just make some friends, and also kind of spread what the organisation does amongst my own circle, so amongst my own family and friends, and yeah, just kind of gets me out of the house, honestly.
So volunteering, well, all of us are volunteers. That's the first thing I say. So even our committee members, our trustees, all of us are just completely voluntary, and we just do it out of the love and joy and wanting to make sure that we put on a good event for our community. I got involved when it got cancelled. So I was part of a group organising for loads of different schools to bring their queer clubs to Exeter Pride. And I was fuming because I did loads of paperwork, loads of the admin for it, then ended up being cancelled. So went along to the meeting, just got chatting to people, and was just like, why don't I help out and give a bit of time? And then it's just sort of snowballed and escalated, and here I am, chair of Exeter Pride. But I would just say it just fills you up with just queer joy. The amount of fabulous, amazing people I have met, the amount of hilarious times, even our committee meetings, though they can be quite long, they're always funny, they're always entertaining, and it just brings you proper community, your chosen family. And especially for members of the LGBTQ+ community, quite often chosen family is really, really crucial to us. So it's connecting people, it's building those relationships. That's why I've got involved.
Brilliant, thank you. So I know you touched on how the event kind of fills up with joy, and it's nice to meet alike people. But if you could expand on that, what does being part of the event mean to you personally?
For me, the big moment was when we watched a video that we put together after Pride last year. So Pride last year was the first one that I got involved in organising. And then we watched a video of where our videographers went round and spoke to different people and just asked the question, what does Pride mean to you? And seeing the responses from members of our community nearly brought me to tears. So it's people saying that to be seen, to be able to come out in their city, to be able to be themselves, to freely express themselves, and to be loved, to be accepted for no judgment, no concern, that was so important to them. And hearing them say that and how much it means to our community, that's what it means to me. That's why I do it.
Honestly, I would have the same answer, just like adding on to that, to have that privilege of being able to provide that space for people is, yeah, an amazing feeling.
And hearing from them as well and talking to them, like, what would you like to see at Exeter Pride, and trying to cater to that and provide that space for them. It's just absolutely fabulous working with our community, because we have such a strong, vibrant LGBTQ+ community down here, and trying to bring them together and organise us. And we can be slightly chaotic, but bringing us together just a bit is just joyous and fabulous. So, yeah, it fills you up with love.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Thank you so much. Final question. If someone is thinking about volunteering, what would you say to them?
Do it. don't know if that was urgent. Now, yes.
Email us.
Well, actually, volunteering is closed for this year because we are quite close to the event. So, yeah, volunteering is closed for this year. But if you are thinking about volunteering and getting involved, first thing I say is on the day, just speak to any member of our committee. So we'll be wearing high-vis jackets. So will our stewards. Chat to them. Ask them. What's it like doing it? What do you have to do? Speak to them. So it's not just us saying, it's all fun, it's all great. Just have a chat to them on the day, see what they say, and find out how you can get involved. We have so many different roles, and all different skills will be welcome with the Exeter Pride, from creative people to your governance. Just thinking of Roscoe, our governance gay is what we call him, this all admin and all policies and everything. There is a role for everyone in Exeter Pride. So even if you maybe don't think, oh, what can I actually give to Exeter Pride? 100% there'll be skills that we need within the community. So yeah, reach out.
Definitely. And I would say give us a few days rest after the event, and then you can message us about it.
Yes, please.
We might be offline for a few minutes.
That was Radio X's Adam Kavanagh speaking with Russell Back and Izzy Cox from Exeter Pride. If you're listening to this after Exeter Pride, you can still get involved for next year's event by going to their website.
And that's Devoncast, your weekly podcast rounding up all the county's crucial stories and talking to the people behind them. Thank you for listening, wherever you're listening, and whatever you're doing while you listen. Don't forget to subscribe, and remember, you can find us on Devoncast Radio on DAB across most of the county. We'll be back next week.
Catch the latest episode of Devoncast every Friday at radiox.co.uk or wherever you get your podcasts.